Hello and welcome to Holden Village. Today is August 21st, 2006. Today is a Bible study with Richard Prigge. And let's listen in.
My name is Richard Prigge. I'm the chaplain at Augustana College in Rock Island, Illinois. And I'm really excited to partner with you in walking through the story of Jacob this week, which is a story that honestly has always kind of haunted me. I seem to return to it at various points in my ministry, whether personally or in leading Bible study, and there's always something that really grabs me about it. And I would admit to you that I haven't figured it out. I mean, there's just a lot going on here that is powerful. Let's begin with prayer. Let us pray. Our gracious God, we thank you for the gift of this morning, another 24 hours in which to learn about ourselves and you, a day in which to serve you right here at Holden Village and to take joy in the life that you've given us. We thank you that we're not alone on the pilgrimage of life, that we have mentors to walk right alongside of us and teach us what it means to live life in faith. So we ask that you keep us open now this day, that we might learn about you through walking with Rebecca and Jacob and the rest of their family. We ask this in the strong name of Jesus Christ, our Lord.
Amen.
Okay, so does everyone have a Bible? We're going to just read through the story. Jacob's story is one of the longest sustained narratives about any one person in the Bible. It's pretty interesting that the story of Jacob is longer, for example, than the story of Abraham. I mean, you think Abraham, I mean, he's kind of the founder to where it all started, but the story of Jacob is much longer than the story of Abraham. There's one obvious reason why the people of God would be interested in Jacob, and that's that they're named after him. Huh? I mean, the people is named Israel, which is the name that Jacob's name is changed to, and we're going to see that story on Thursday. So, I mean, obviously, if you're named after one of your ancestors or whatever, you're a little more interested in them than you might be in other members of your family. But I would also argue that it's more than just that, that there's a spiritual resonance here in the story of Jacob that is more so than other stories in the Bible. So it's almost as if the people, linger on that story in order to mine that spiritual resonance. My Old Testament professor used to call the book of Genesis the Adventures of the Promise. The Adventures of the Promise. And I think he's really on to something. In other words, God made a promise to Abraham. Remember that all the way back in chapter 12 of Genesis, that I'm going to bless you and all the families of the earth are going to be blessed through you. And just look up at the stars, Abraham, because your descendants are going to be as numerous as the stars in the sky. And Abraham says, that's great, God, but there's just one little problem. I haven't got any children, so it's not a real good place to start from in, making descendants as numerous as that. So there's all sorts of ups and downs and, blind alleys and straight paths that this story, The Adventures of the Promise, take, and we're going to see some of them here in the story of Jacob. So, if your life seems a little, roundabout and up and down, well, just join the rest of the family, because it starts right here. I want to claim the story of Jacob as an archetypal story. And that means that the story is clearly not just about one person, Jacob, who lived whenever he lived way back when, but it's a story really about each of us spiritually. That's what an archetype is, huh? It's a story about something bigger than one person. It's a story that's bigger about the people in the story. It's a story about you and me. In particular, I think we're going to see this week that Jacob's story has a lot to teach us about the nature of spiritual growth. What are the ingredients of going deeper spiritually? We're going to see that Jacob starts out as a pretty egocentric individual. The world kind of revolves around him, and he's really not very aware at all of God's activity in his life. But through a variety of circumstances, he comes, by the end of the story, to be able to really consider the welfare of others. That's a huge step for him. And also to wrestle with what God is doing in his life, which is a huge, huge progression. And we're going to, again, I want for us to look at the ingredients in that growth, because they're ingredients that are offered to us too. Finally, by way of introduction, we ought to just admit straight up that this is a story about a family. Okay, it's not a story about great world events, about wars and rumors of wars, and you know, and we get those stories big time, right? I mean, we got David and we got the prophets and so forth. But this, it's almost as if the focus really narrows here to focus on just one family. And I think by doing so, it really hallows life in our family. I mean, it would have us consider that in the life of the family, any family, something holy is happening there. So let's just start very quickly by reminding ourselves about this family, huh? Which started with Abraham and Sarah. And Abraham and Sarah had how many children?
One.
They had one child, whose name was?
Isaac.
And the name Isaac means?
Laughter.
Yeah. How'd you like to be named Laughter?
Well, Abraham had another one.
Oh, yes, he did.
Can we talk about that?
Yeah. So we've got Abraham.
With another woman.
And Hagar.
Yep.
Sarah was so despairing about not having a child, she said, well, Abraham, I'll give you my maid to go into, and at least we'll kind of have a pseudo-child or a surrogate child through Hagar. And the name of Abraham and Hagar's son was?
Ishmael.
Ishmael. Mm-hmm. And Ishmael, by the way, we're not going to look at this at all, had 12 sons. Kind of a mirror of Jacob's. And then, now here's a member of the family that you may not be familiar with, but we're going to need to know about for today, because Abraham had a brother whose name was Nahor. And Nahor's wife's name was Milcah. And they had a son. They may have had more than one child, but the child that we're interested in is Betuel. Betuel. Both Nahor and Abraham were from Haran, up in the north country, up in modern-day Syria. Okay, so then to Isaac. Oh, let's see. Well, now Betuel has two children. Well, at least two. The two that we're interested in are Laban, a son, and Rebecca. And Isaac marries Rebecca. So Rebecca is Isaac's second cousin. Okay, we're going to read this story. And Isaac and Rebecca have two sons whose names are?
Esau
and Jacob.
Weren't they twins?
They were.
Yeah.
They were twins. And Laban has a couple of daughters. Remember that? Leah and Rachel. And Jacob ends up marrying Rachel, his first cousin.
Well, he marries Leah first.
Yes, he does. That's right, yes. He marries Leah unawares. Yeah, and we'll look at that story on Wednesday. The story of Jacob and Leah and Rachel. So let's just say a word. We're not going to have a great deal to say about Isaac. But why don't we just bring to the forefront here what we know about Isaac, first of all.
He almost got sacrificed.
He did. He almost got sacrificed by his father Abraham, supposedly in the name of God, right? Mm-hmm. God tells Abraham, go and sacrifice your son. So there might be a little trauma there, huh? I mean, Isaac's relationship with God, huh? I mean, he almost got killed at the order of God. Yeah.
I'm starting to read that book, The Source, because I thought it would be a good book to read now to bring up history. I know it's fiction, but a lot of it is mentioned and resourced a lot. But that was really, that was the tradition. I mean, you know, Abraham still was not out of that, that ritual of offering up your firstborn son from the pagan gods. And so maybe, even though, I mean, it must have been a horrible thing, but I mean, still, it was something that was happening in their culture. So it might not have been as much of a shock to him as it is to us.
Yeah, there's thought that part of that story might be a critique of that child sacrifice practice.
And a statement that the people of God were to move away from
that.
Exactly.
That's right.
From
that
practice. Lesson, yeah. The violence mm-hmm. that you see throughout the Old Testament.
Right.
Mm-hmm. We're going to choose a way non-violent.
Okay. But personally, at least, I'm suggesting there's a little, maybe a little trauma there for Isaac. What else?
He was apparently old enough to know that you needed a sacrificial lamb. You needed a sacrificial subject. And who is it?
That's right.
Yeah, he was old enough.
That's a very poignant story. We're not going to read it, but it's a very, very poignant story. But backing up then, how about the birth of Isaac? Isaac was a miracle baby, wasn't he? I mean, Sarah were in their 90s.
90.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So he was a miracle. I mean, never was there a more awaited baby than Isaac. Remarkable. Let's see some other things about. Clearly, the tradition is not as interested in Isaac as in Jacob. Again, we don't have many stories about Isaac, and we have 11, 12 chapters about Jacob. So there's some something there spiritually that's not quite as interesting to the tradition about Isaac. In fact, I think it really is accurate to say that the best thing Isaac ever did, or the most important thing Isaac ever did, was marry Rebecca. That was his greatest accomplishment. Rebecca is far more important to advancing the story than Isaac is. And I want to show you that right now in this long story about the choice of Rebecca to be Isaac's wife. This is in chapter 24 of Genesis, so I'll turn to chapter 24. Thank you. Okay, and what we're going to do is just to read through this story now as a group. I always say that, yeah, let's just read through it, but sometimes I can't help myself from stopping at a certain point. But if we do it the way I'm intending to, we're simply going to read through this entire story, and then I'm going to ask you what strikes you in the story. And then I've got a few comments about it myself. So what I need 10 readers. Because we're just going to read through this. So who would be willing to read? Just kind of raise your hand. Okay, so we'll have you read verses 1 through 9. Okay? And then if you'd read 10 through 14. See, we got other readers here. Okay, all the way, Steve, how about 15 to 21, verses 15 to 21. Okay, and then verses 22 to 27 and 28 to 33. Okay, and then we've got more readers. Let's have some readers over here. Yeah, how about 34 to 41? And let's see if we got some other readers. You do that on the readers.
Sure.
You're in fine voice this morning.
Oh, yes.
Just tell us. How about, I got a short waiting. 42 to 44.
Very good.
Okay. And then how about in the back there? Are you willing to read?
Sure. Yeah.
How about 45 to 51? Okay. Any other readers here? Okay, great. Gail. And 52 to 61. There's a good one. And then one more. Got one more reader. Good. You can conclude us here. 62 to 67. Okay, is everyone who's reading clear about it? Okay, and I think you were going to begin, right? So now let's, as much as we can, take this into ourselves here. And if something, you know, really strikes you as, wow, this is exciting, or wow, that's really puzzling, I don't get that at all. Kind of try to hang on to that and we'll bring it up. So let's go for it.
Now Abraham was old, well advanced in years, and the Lord had blessed Abraham in all things. And Abraham said to his servant, the oldest of his house, who had charge of all that he had, "Put your hand under my thigh, and I will make you swear by the Lord, the God of heaven and of earth, that you will not take a wife for my son from the daughter of the Canaanites among whom I dwell, but will go to my country and to my kindred and take a wife for my son Isaac." The servant said to him, "Perhaps the woman may not be willing to follow me to this land. Must I then take your son back to the land of which you came?" Abraham said to him, "See to it that you do not take my son back there. The Lord, the God of heaven, who took me from my father's house and from the land of my birth, and who spoke to me and swore to me, 'To your descendants I will give this land,' he will send his angel before you, and you shall take a wife for my son from there. But if the woman is not willing to follow you, then you will be free from this oath of mine. Only you must not take my son back there." So the servant put his hand under the thigh of Abraham, his master, and swore to him concerning this matter.
Then the servant took 10 of his master's camels and departed, taking all sorts of choice gifts from his master. And he arose and went to Mesopotamia, to the city of Nahor. And he made the camels kneel down outside the city by the well of water at the time of evening, the time when women go out to draw water. And he said, "O Lord, God of my master Abraham, grant me success today, I pray thee, and show steadfast love to my master Abraham. Behold, I am standing by the spring of water, and the daughters of the men of the city are coming out to draw water. Let the maiden to whom I shall say, 'Pray, let down your jar that I may drink,' and who shall say, 'Drink, and I will water your camels,' let her be the one whom thou hast appointed for thy servant Isaac. By this I shall know that thou hast shown steadfast love to my master."
Before he had done speaking, behold, Rebekah, who was born to Bethuel, the son of Milcah, the wife of Nahor, Abraham's brother, came out with her water jar upon her shoulder. The maiden was very fair to look upon, a virgin whom no man had known. She went down to the spring and filled her jar and came up. Then the servant ran to meet her and said, "Pray, give me a little water to drink from your jar." She said, "Drink, my lord," and she quickly let down her jar upon her hand and gave him a drink. When she had finished giving him a drink, she said, "I will draw for your camels also until they have done drinking." So she quickly emptied her jar into the trough and ran again to the well to draw, and she drew for all his camels. The man gazed at her in silence to learn whether the Lord had prospered his journey or not.
When the camels had finished drinking, the man took out a gold nose ring weighing a bekel and two gold bracelets weighing 10 shekels. Then he asked, "Whose daughter are you? Please tell me if there is room in your father's house for us to spend the night." She answered him, "I am the daughter of Bethuel, the son that that Milcah bore to Nahor." And she added, "We have plenty of straw and fodder, as well as room for you to spend the night." Then the man bowed down and worshiped the Lord, saying, "Praise be to the Lord, the God of my master Abraham, who has not abandoned his kindness and faithfulness to my master. As for me, the Lord has led me on the journey to the house of my master's relatives."
Then the girl ran and told her mother's household about these things. Rebecca had a brother whose name was Laban. And Laban ran out to the man to the spring. As soon as he had seen the nose ring and the bracelets on his sister's arms, and when he heard the words of his sister Rebecca, "Thus the man spoke to me," he went to the man, and there he was standing by the camels at the spring. He said, "Come in, O blessed of the Lord. Why do you stand outside when I have prepared the house and a place for the camels?" So the man came into the house, and Laban unloaded the camels and gave him straw and fodder for the camels and water to wash his feet and the feet of the men who were with him. Then the food was set before him to eat. But he said, "I will not eat until I have told my errand." He said, "Speak on."
So he said, "I am Abraham's servant. The Lord has greatly blessed my master, and he has become wealthy. He has given him flocks and herds, silver and gold, male and female slaves, camels and donkeys. And Sarah, my master's wife, bore a son to my master when she was old, and he has given him all that he has. My master made me swear, saying, 'You shall not take away from my son from the daughters of the Canaanites in whose land I live, but you shall go to my father's house, to my kindred, and get a wife for my son.' I said to my master, 'Perhaps the woman will not follow me.' But he said to me, 'The Lord, before whom I walk, will send his angel with you and make your way successful. You shall get a wife for my son from my kindred, from my father's house. Then you will be free from my oath when you come to my kindred. Even if they will not give her to you, you will be free from my oath.'
I came today to the spring and said, 'O Lord, the God of my master Abraham, if now you will only make successful the way I am going. I am standing here by the spring of water. Let the young woman who comes out to draw, to whom I shall say, 'Please, give me a little water from your jar to drink,' and who will say to me, 'Drink, and I will draw for your camels also,' let her be the woman whom the Lord has appointed for my master's son." Before I had finished speaking in my heart, behold, Rebecca came out with her jar on her shoulder and went down to the spring and drew. And I said to her, "Please let me drink." And she quickly lowered her jar from her shoulder and said, "Drink, and I will water your camels also." So I drank, and she watered the camels also. Then I asked her and said, "Whose daughter are you?" And she said, "The daughter of Bethuel, Nahor's son, whom Milcah bore to him." And I put the ring on her nose and the bracelets on her wrists. And I bowed low and worshiped the Lord and blessed the Lord, the God of my master Abraham, who who had guided me in the right way to take the daughter of my master's kinsman for his son. So now, if you are going to deal kindly and truly with my master, tell me. And if not, let me know, that I may turn to the right hand or the left. Then Laban and Bethuel answered and said, the matter comes from the Lord, so we cannot speak to you bad or good. Behold, Rebekah is before you. Take her and go, and let her be the wife of your master's son, as the Lord has spoken.
When Abraham's servant heard their words, he bowed himself to the ground before the Lord. And the servant brought out jewelry of silver and gold and garments and gave them to Rebekah. He also gave to her brother and to her mother costly ornaments. Then he and the men who were with him ate and drank, and they spent the night there. When they rose in the morning, he said, send me back to my master. Her brother and her mother said, let the girl remain with us a while, at least 10 days. After that she may go. But he said to them, do not delay me. Since the Lord has made my journey successful, let me go, that I may go to my master. They said, we will call the girl and ask her. And they called Rebekah and said to her, will you go with this man? She said, I will. So they sent away their sister Rebekah and her nurse, along with Abraham's servant and his men. And they blessed Rebekah and said to her, may you, our sister, become thousands of myriads. May your offspring gain possession of the gates of their foes. Then Rebekah and her maids rose up, mounted the camels, and followed the man. Thus the servant took Rebekah and went his way.
Now Isaac came from the way of Beer Lehi Rio, for he dwelt in the south. And Isaac went not to meditate to the field in the evening. And he lifted his eyes and looked, and there the camels were coming. Then Rebekah lifted her eyes, and when she saw Isaac, she dismounted from her camel. For she had said to the servant, who is this man walking in the field to meet us? And the servant said, it is my master. So she took a veil and covered herself. And the servant told Isaac all the things that he had done. Then Isaac brought her into his mother Sarah's tent, and he took Rebekah, and she became his wife, and he loved her. So Isaac was comforted after his mother's death.
Thanks all the readers. Wow. Well read. Okay. What struck you?
The very last sentence struck me. I don't remember ever having seen that or had it registered with me before. The last sentence is that Isaac was comforted after his mother's death.
Yeah, right. Yeah.
He had another woman to comfort him, I guess it means. He had a person to be with him, to nurture him, to keep him warm, whatever. It's kind of curious that that's the last word of the story.
Right. Mm-hmm.
I thought it was interesting that the man who was so important in the story didn't have a name, the servant.
Ah.
The servant.
Yeah, so let's talk a little bit about the servant. Well, what about this servant?
He's the oldest of the house, in charge of all that Abraham has.
Okay, so he's kind of the senior servant, in a sense, of Abraham.
And he's sort of given the assignment of arranging a marriage. I mean, that's his task.
He certainly
is. Arrange a marriage.
He certainly is.
Does that mean he's a slave and also?
He's a slave.
Is there a difference between servant and slave?
No, he's a slave. Yeah, the word is the same, actually. So he's a slave.
And he's a spiritual man.
Ah, how do you know that?
He's a man of prayer and someone who really believes in the power of prayer.
He prays more than once here, does he not?
Mm-hmm.
Did you also notice, I particularly like the detail in verse 21, he sets up this condition with God, okay? Okay, let it be this way, God. Now, if I say to the woman, give me some water, she gives me water and also says, well, let me give you the camel's water. And it happens exactly, I mean, how eerie is this, huh? I mean, it happens exactly the way he is set up. But even then, after it's happened exactly the way he had set up, notice verse 21. The man gazed at her in silence to learn whether or not the Lord had made his journey successful.
He studies her.
Yeah, he does. There's some, yeah, go ahead.
I thought it was interesting the condition that he set up. But
okay.
It could have been like the fleece, you know. If the woman has a red shoe, then she's the one. But instead, he used the condition of hospitality.
Ah. Okay. I think that's actually an extremely important part of this story. We're just going to kind of hold that for just a minute and ask if there's anything more about the servant, you know, here that you wanted to say. He certainly is an appealing character, isn't he? I think he is.
He's sort of worldly wise and cagey, too. When the family wants to kind of put him off and say, let's wait 10 days, he says, no, you know.
Let's go now.
He thinks, I think he sort of maybe suspects something. And I noticed how Laban looks at the gold gifts that I think Rebecca was wearing at that point, and so you're kind of wondering if maybe he's thinking that they're going to try to take advantage of him somehow, and not really. I don't know. It just seemed like he wanted to get out of there. Once he found the wife, he wanted to go ahead and finish it, and then she, you know, it wants to go along with that too.
Right, right. That's a great observation. He senses some. If he better not wait for 10 days,
yeah.
Better jump on this right now. Yeah. Laban, by the way, we're going to meet again now.
Yeah.
We're going to meet on Wednesday in the story of Jacob's going to Laban to find a wife. Yeah, so what sense do you get here of Laban? I want to pursue that for just a second here. Well, how about Laban now? He rushes out to meet the servant. Why, or you know, what's the impetus for his rushing out? I mean, this is just kind of where you have to read between the lines.
It's all the jewelry.
Yeah, all that jewelry on Rebecca all of a sudden perked him up, didn't it? Yeah. Laban's a very interesting character in the overall story, but we'll meet him mainly on Wednesday. Okay, so the servant is a very savvy, but also very spiritual man here. Savviness and spiritual sensibility can go together, as we see in the servant. Yeah, go ahead.
Well, he just kind of wants all his bases covered. I mean, he's planning ahead in verse 5 when he says, you know, what if the woman is not willing to come back, must I take your son back to that land? He wants to have it all mapped out ahead of time, so he does everything correctly.
Yes.
I thought that was interesting for a servant, you know, to think ahead and want to be obedient to his master.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah, very good, very good. So he's a planner and a thinker. Yeah. Good. Yeah, go ahead.
He's also very straightforward. Because he's got a mission that's really important to his master. And he's anxious that it gets fulfilled. But that kind of repetitive deal where the story repeats the whole story word for word around the fire, he tells them everything.
Right.
Including what happens if they turn him down.
Right.
And he didn't have to do that.
So what do you make of that?
Well, that he's not crafty.
Okay. He's transparent.
Yeah.
Uh-huh.
But don't you think he might be afraid of the consequences of his plan, if the plan that or the command that he's given he wants to know what the backup is, what will happen to him if he has to take them?
Yeah. Well, of course, Abraham has released him of his oath, hasn't he? If he goes and the woman that he identified won't go, he's released him of his oath, so.
I think that he's just very loyal. He says,
yes.
O Lord God of my master Abraham, please grant me success today and show my steadfast love to my master Abraham. This was not his God, it was Abraham's God. And as a part of household of Abraham, he does what Abraham asks and professes that that is Abraham's God, and it's the one that I use now too.
Right.
That really struck me.
Mm-hmm. That's very cool. Yeah. Yeah. Yes.
What I'm thinking is not the people within the story, but the idea that water was actually the instrument of people coming to the well, or people giving somebody a drink, that the water was a way of communicating to another one.
Yeah, absolutely. A lot happens at wells.
The well was the central place.
Mm-hmm.
It's the symbol of hospitality. Often in a semi-arid region, it's the most important thing you can do is to give water.
Right. Mm-hmm. Yes.
This is just kind of a curiosity I have. I'm curious about the oath, this laying on the hand under the thigh.
Oh, yeah.
Is that the only time that appears in the Bible, or was that pre-handshake, or
that's right, pre-handshake, that's a great way of putting it, Yeah, it's kind of a way of swearing. Let's talk about, how about, you want to go put your hand under his thigh and swear?
It seems a little strange,
Wait a minute, more than strange, why don't we revise that a little bit? Intimate! Of course, it's a very intimate way of promising.
Vulnerable,
absolutely. Right, absolutely. So it's really kind of more than a handshake, almost at a deeper level.
Is that the only time that appears in the Bible?
No, but I'm not thinking of exactly where else, but that'll be your research project for you. Yeah, yes.
Just a question. Why was Abraham so insistent about going back to his relatives rather than the Canaanites?
Okay, this is going to be the second time that I put something that you've said kind of up on the shelf to come back to. So that's, I think, is very, very interesting detail, and we'll come back to that in a minute. So now let's take the first comment down. Yeah, go ahead, Cliff.
Oh, okay. I was just going to say that something I found interesting was that the servant keeps referring to his master, Abraham. At the end, when Rebecca sees Isaac and wants to know who it is, the servant says, "That's my master."
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And so I guess that's a family thing going on, but all this time he's been Abraham's servant. That's my master. Now here, it's all of a sudden
Isaac becomes the master.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. They're both masters.
Oh. Well, maybe he becomes the master because he's going to have a wife.
Right.
Mm-hmm. Is there any, how about this family hearing my master Abraham? Does that ring any bells with his family?
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
Come on. The brother of
Nahor.
So we've got some sympathy here. Let's take down this comment, a previous comment about hospitality. Okay? A couple of things that are, I think, huge about Rebecca. If we're going to ask Rebecca to mentor us here today spiritually, the first huge thing to notice is her hospitality. What's the evidence of that here in the story?
Isn't it she gave the water to the servant and then ran off and built the trough again for the camels? And it must have been quite a few trips to the well and back.
What is she doing? She didn't come out that day expecting to see the servant of Abraham. What is she up to?
She's just getting water for the household.
Yeah. Okay. It must have been the daily practice that at the end of the day, slightly cooler perhaps, women went out and drew water.
It was part of the job of women in that culture in that time is to this day in many parts of the world, to get the water, to bring the water.
And you would do that in the morning and at night.
Okay, so Rebecca's minding her own business here about her daily task, and all of a sudden is confronted by this man. She not only gives him a drink of water, but thinks enough about his camels to
to go to some effort to water them, and then invites him to stay the night with the family. Do you remember the verse in Hebrews, the book of Hebrews in the New Testament? Do not neglect to show hospitality to strangers, for thereby
many have entertained angels unawares.
Many have entertained angels unawares. Do not neglect to show hospitality to strangers. I just this morning at breakfast heard a story of a friend of mine, a woman who was looking to go on a hike the other day and kind of asking around, you know, who wants to go on a hike. She went out with these four men who she said were a little, I believe she just said they were a little strange, but she decided to go with them, and she had a remarkable, remarkable hike in which she ended up telling her life story to these men, and they resonated with that, and at the end, the one man said to her, "This hike has turned out to be exceeded my expectations hugely. You've given me so much to think about." Now, here's a woman setting out to hike with four strange men, and it turns out to be a revelatory experience. Holden, yes, go ahead.
I was thinking of when I was growing up, I had a Reformed Jewish father, and in our Jewish background that I remember was that we always had a place sitting at our table, just in case there's somebody that shows up that needs something to eat.
Wow.
And we've always done that as a ritual at dinner time, that there was always a place setting, that if there's somebody else that needs to come to eat, there's food available.
Wow, wow, what a wonderful ritual. Gosh. At every meal?
At every meal.
Wow. Great. The other thing, this year at Holden, this is my second time at Holden. I was here 5 years ago, and this year in the dining room they're doing something different. Those of you who have been here know this. Those of you who are new may not. That they are doing often at meals what is called continuous dining. Okay, continuous dining. So that they wait, you just randomly come to the door of the dining room and they wait for eight people to show up, and when eight people show up, they send those eight people in to sit at a table together. Now, you know, these eight people may be a ragtag group of, you know, a couple from one family and a couple of others, and so you're sitting with people that you didn't intend to sit with them, you're just thrown together with them. But in that throwing together, some holy stuff might happen. Do not neglect to entertain strangers, for thereby some have entertained angels. You know, pastors sometimes talk about a ministry of interruptions. You ever heard that phrase? It's a great thing. I'm sitting at my desk, I'm preparing my sermon for this Sunday, I'm a little bit behind, I'm kind of driven, I got to get this done, and all of a sudden some member of the parish shows up at the door needing to talk. Okay, what do you do mentally and emotionally? Oh my goodness, I've got to get rid of this woman, you know, or man, you know, I've only got 10 minutes here because I'm preparing my sermon, you know, I just got to get done.
I've got to make a hospital visit.
Later. Yeah, that's right. Yeah, that's right. I got all this
got
to
this
do
schedule,
before
yeah.
I go home. Yeah, and that's real. I mean, that's real. I'm not making fun of it because that's a real experience. And it doesn't have to be a pastor. I mean, all of you have this experience where you're driven, you know, to get one thing done, and all of a sudden you're interrupted. So, do you say
without an appointment?
Yeah, without an appointment.
Show up, yeah.
How outrageous.
Yes.
The servant hadn't made an appointment either. What the heck was he thinking? He could have called ahead. So do you say, oh my, I got to get rid of this person, or I got to move on, or do you say, okay, God, what are you wanting to reveal now? What are you up to? Rebecca teaches us that. That interruptions can be the presence of God. Yeah, Steve?
I was just thinking that kind of before the story begins, Abraham trying to come up with this whole approach to finding his son a wife, and you know, could have had, you know, posted a notice saying, please submit your resumes to, you know, here's all the money you could get, you know, and you know, I mean, but just such an indirect kind of obtuse way to do this whole thing. I mean, rather than kind of march in, you know, he'd become very successful, and he would be well known in that community. It's sort of the one who went off and did all these wonderful things.
Right.
And sort of found a different approach, inspired approach.
Yeah, absolutely, absolutely. And again, the servant is certainly, I mean, he could have set up to find the most beautiful woman, although the narrator cannot help from telling us that, by the way, Rebecca's pretty beautiful too. But he could have set up the criteria would be physical beauty, you know, or status in the community. But that's not it. I mean, the criteria is the willingness to show hospitality. Yes?
I'm just kind of thinking, in our generation, do we not kind of maybe as parents think about this when we scrape all the money we can together to send them off to a Christian school? You know, hoping that maybe they might meet somebody. It doesn't have to be of their faith.
Mm-hmm.
If you go to
okay.
a Christian school, the chances are that they're going to be another Christian
okay.
over and against going to a state school. But I mean, if you can't afford to do it, you can't. But I mean, I know my husband and I kind of hope for that they would meet
mm-hmm.
somebody in their Christian faith.
Mm-hmm.
So it maybe it's underlined.
Sure, yeah, absolutely.
I can't help but think that this Rebecca is somewhat of an adventurous woman.
Ah.
Because, I mean, it wasn't common practice for men and women to speak, especially to strangers.
Mm-hmm.
And she could have easily said, hey, dude, you know, the water's here.
Right, help yourself.
Help yourself. But even later on, the choice is given to her.
Yes, absolutely.
You know, and she says, I want to go for it.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. Adventurous.
Mm-hmm.
Absolutely. Let's get then with that to this business of leaving home.
She's a risk taker.
She is. She is. Could we say, if you were to look on a map, you would find that from Abraham and Nahor were from Haran up north. And Isaac... well, they were around Beersheba, which is actually in kind of southern.
The far south.
Israel. Mm-hmm. So you've got here a journey of about 500 miles. That's an awfully, awfully long journey.
How long would that take on camel?
I don't know. I don't know. Well, how many miles do you figure you would travel a day?
I can travel about 15 miles.
15 miles a day?
Wow.
Okay, well, you can do the math.
Oh, no, I can't.
Well, we've got about...
6 weeks or so?
Yeah.
30 days?
About between 30 and 50 days, whatever it would be. Yeah, that's if you really plugged away at it and did the same every day. You've got a long journey here. So the likelihood of her seeing her family again is... remote.
Maybe she wanted to get away from Laban.
Okay, all right. You're reading between the lines.
Well, we've identified him as kind of a shifty character as an older brother. Maybe she was ready to get away.
See, I thought the opposite. I thought that she sort of points to that her and her family have a really good relationship. She's like, hey, I brought some people home. They need to eat. And then, you know, her mother and her brother and her dad, they're all talking, and we're going to let her decide. And
yeah.
She's just, okay, I'm going to go. But
right. So there you get that adventurous spirit, the risk-taking factor. I would also say the trusting.
Mm-hmm.
She's very trusting.
And they respect, and her family respects her, what she thinks and wants.
But of course, what does she do when she sees Isaac? The veil goes on.
Well, that, okay.
You know, so she knows how to play that kind of game.
Okay.
Too, you know.
The proper role. I saw that as some kind of a, yeah, it is a game, but it's also like playing the role. Expected of her as a woman.
Yeah. What is this business referred to earlier about, and Abraham is insistent of this, that the servant not take Isaac up to Haran? I mean, this is a bit paradoxical, isn't it? I mean, he sends the servant up to Haran to get a wife for Isaac.
Yeah.
But in no case is the servant to take Isaac back to Haran.
Well, he might be afraid that Isaac would just look for the most beautiful one and not, you know, look for like what the servant figured out was beautiful inside. Isaac would see somebody, that's the one I want, and not knowing what she really was inside.
The servant is to be a matchmaker on behalf of Isaac, but Isaac is not involved in the...
No, he is not. No, he is not.
Until he sees her.
Well, there's a danger Isaac might stay up there
and
not get back.
But what would be wrong with that?
God,
that's where Abraham's from.
But
I mean,
God's
that's his homeland.
Right. God's,
it's about God's will, yeah.
You
Verse 7.
Verse 7.
Verse 7. Wanted to go out of heaven. Wanted him to go up there to get. He will send his angel before you, and you shall take a wife for my son from there.
Yeah, I know that. I mean, we're clear about that the wife is to come from Haran. But there's also an absolute insistence that Isaac is not to be taken back to Haran.
Because it's his only son.
Okay, well, emotionally, certainly. I mean, he doesn't want to be parted. But I want, yeah, go ahead.
And the land, Sarah has already died, so Abraham would be by himself.
Okay.
Isaac.
He'd be totally bereft, wouldn't he?
Yeah.
Okay, good.
And this is Abraham's whole purpose in life, is to go to this new land and to settle there. I mean, this is what God has told him to do, and so he's carrying out this, the will of God.
Okay, so to bring Isaac, to allow him to go back to Haran, would be, in a sense, going backwards, wouldn't it? It would be going backwards. You know, it's almost like, been there, done that. Here, we've made the big, we've taken the big risk to come down here. We're not going back. Okay? Let's not go back.
But we still want our own people to be the one.
We do.
Yeah. So we're not,
we're not,
I'm not taking any chances, but let's go get someone like us.
No more money.
Right. There's some paradox there, but I think there is something about not going backwards here. So...
there was some history of that with some of us in this room whose ancestors immigrated from Europe, and then there were some arranged marriages, and the practice was not to go back to Europe to find a wife, but to bring a woman from Europe to live here.
Ah.
But I have that in my family history.
I see.
About 4 generations back, and they were arranged marriages. They were. I mean, they had communication, written communication, and sometimes they had pictures, but there was no meeting until the bride got here, and the practice was not to go back to Europe to find one, but to bring one here.
Right. Hmm. Interesting.
That was in German-American tradition.
How old do you think Rebecca would have been? I mean, in your Jewish study, I mean, are they, like, Mary, very young? I mean...
Yeah, probably.
Probably a teenager, I would guess.
Probably a teenager, yeah.
And why did she go get the water? Why wouldn't they have had servants doing that? She was a daughter of the household. Do we think she was among servants and we just don't hear about them? Well, women were like halfway servants, weren't they? I mean, they were.
Well, this was their work.
Yeah,
it was their work.
Men had their own work too, but this was their work. I don't know the answer to that question. What is there though about this? I would say if hospitality is the first thing that Rebecca teaches us about spiritual sensitivity, then I think the second thing is a willingness to leave home. An adventurous sort of way, a risk-taking, but also a trusting sort of way. And I want to say, I mean, obviously we're reading the story here, so we can talk about this literally. You know, Rebecca in the story literally went 500 miles, you know, away from home. But, you know, there's also if this is an archetypal story, as I think it is, there are many ways to leave home. Right? I mean, you can leave home, like I left home at age 18 to go to college, and I didn't ever return home for any long period of time after that. But I would say I really left home 4 years after that, after I graduated from college, and I went to Washington, D.C. To work for the Lutheran Council Office for Governmental Affairs. And one of my jobs was to attend congressional hearings, you know, that had to do particularly with food policy issues at that time. So I'd go to these hearings, you know, and I'd see the senators and congressmen up there, and, you know, like day after day, I would see the elected officials that my parents most respected almost invariably opposed to what we were trying to do, I mean, in the policies that the church was trying to put forward. And the politicians that my parents just had absolutely no use for were our great heroes.
They were voting right on food policy.
Yeah. So I mean, and I had what in the world was I going to do with this? See, that was the moment at which I left home.
You went a different way from where your parents were.
I did. And I couldn't, frankly, that's not to say that someone can't go the same way, but it's that ownership, you know, your own adult choice to say, here's my choice, here's what I see. Leaving home, there's something spiritually about leaving. In order to grow spiritually, oh, there's one person in the family here who never leaves home. Isaac never leaves home. He lives all of his life right there. And again, I want to say spiritually, you can leave home without ever moving away from it. Same geographical location, Yaakov.
But Isaac does go to well out in the desert.
Well, he does. Mm-hmm. That's right. It's in the same region, but you're right. That's pretty desolate territory, too.
Yeah, Tim and I were part of a study group earlier this summer where we got to stand at the place where Isaac would have been looking out, meditating in this passage. There's really not much to meditate on. Very, very barren. And we were talking rocks and a shrub here and there. But it gives you a kind of feeling that Isaac does have some depth there because he's out there meditating in the desert.
Interesting. Is this speaking to you at all? I mean, the necessity of leaving home in order to grow spiritually?
I wonder, too, if Rebecca didn't sense something in the integrity of the servant who comes. You know, we talk about how we see him as being a man of great wisdom, and I wonder if she didn't also see that, and see that then as something that she wanted to follow, and, you know, if he came from this family, that then she saw something in that family that she wanted to be part of, maybe.
I think that
like
you're onto something. Rebecca is incredibly intuitive. We're going to see that in the next story here about the birth of Jacob and Esau. So the willingness to follow that intuition
is another, rather than to say, ah, oh, well, I got this feeling. Could be wrong.
There's a craftiness to Rebecca as well.
Oh, wait until we see the next one.
Yeah, let's look at it from a different perspective. I mean, here's a stranger coming up and gives you a nose ring and a couple bracelets, mm-hmm. and, you know, and
come with me.
Come, yeah, and starts talking to the family. And this is a person of another family of stature, and they want me. And whoa, you know, I'm not getting anything where I am now in that sense. And whoa, this could be right. This could be a free ride. This could be a ride to everything ever.
Could be a bill of goods.
Yeah,
Well, we're at our ending time. We'll get you on. Go ahead, please.
Well, until Rebecca sees in the field, is she assuming she's marrying Abraham?
No, because it's the clearly identified that it's the master's son.
Oh, okay.
So
okay.
It's Abraham's son, yeah. Well, okay, we're at our ending time, so maybe I would just lift up for you or invite you, even today, here, to be sensitive to the opportunities to welcome strangers or new ideas or strange events hospitably, and thereby to entertain angels. And also then the opportunities this week at Holden to leave home, and thereby to grow spiritually. We're going to see tomorrow, again, I would argue tomorrow is almost all about Rebecca, too, because it's going to be the story of the birth, the pregnancy, and the birth of Esau and Jacob. We'll spend at least some time in the tricking of Isaac out of his final blessing, and then we will look at the remarkable dream that Jacob has. As he's beating a path out of his hometown. So that's where we're headed tomorrow. Thank you for today.
Thank you.